Hello and welcome to episode number 7 of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Julio Ortiz.
And I'm the other co-host, James Patton. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for being here. This is my podcast. This is our podcast.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Welcome to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here. All you lovely people. It's getting right around that time for Thanksgiving during a whole pandemic, so that's going to be interesting. Get that coming up this week. We just, you know, with all the stuff that's going on, we definitely want to record an episode. We know it's been a while. But yeah, we're excited to kind of get through all the stuff that we have on the docket. Hamas, how are you feeling? How are you feeling? Everything good?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. I mean, aside from the third wave of coronavirus coming, I feel as good as can be, I think. I'm ready to jump back into this.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, like I mentioned, we missed a couple weeks, but it's all right. We're going to come back to you with some great content, especially over the holidays. We know all the leagues around the world are – it's a very special time. It'll be probably even crazier with all the scheduling that everyone's doing right around these times. So we're excited to get back to make content for y'all. I think, Hamas, do you just want to jump straight into it?
Yeah, let's jump straight in, bro. All
right, cool. First thing, I'm going to let you take it off, but first thing on the docket here is Manchester United getting a dub against, was it Brighton this weekend?
West Bromwich.
Oh, West Brom, sorry. Yeah, Man U getting a dub against West Brom. What are your thoughts, analysis, general gripes?
Well, I thought this was news alone, that we got a win, if that says anything. It was won by a Bruno Fernandes penalty, which he had to retake. So, very exciting stuff. Man U has jumped into 10th place in the table. And, I mean, it's only 3 points that separate them from Everton in 6th place with 16 points. And it's still early days. I mean, I still think Man U still has a chance to climb back up there in the top four. I mean, any expectations other than top four? I think Ola loses his job. I mean, that's got to be the bottom standard at this point. It's just not super exciting. I mean, against a team like West Brom, who are struggling at the bottom of the table, we need to be scoring way more than just one goal. I mean, Manu had about 17 shots, only getting a pen. That's not great conversion rate. I mean, defensively, we were okay. I mean, West Brom didn't get that many opportunities, but hey, a clean sheet's a clean sheet. I'll take those whenever we get them at this point, if I'm being honest.
Indeed. And as a City fan, I would too. I'll take clean sheets all day, any day. Yeah, you mentioned an interesting point. Well, I mean, I guess we've talked about this in almost every podcast, but the whole Ole out, you know, what's the timeline for how much leniency he'll be given by the Man U board. But you mentioned until, you know, end of the year, not getting in top four. That would be maybe a time where they would look at his contract or they would look at that situation. But it's really weird to kind of go into that like now. Like, you know, like this whole COVID season, this like really compressed schedule. It's like, you know, because we haven't even seen like a coach being fired yet, which I think that's pretty weird.
I would agree. They're only 9 games into this season, but it wasn't even that long ago when they finished the last Premier League season. Things have just been kind of strange. And I think a lot of it as well is there's not really a whole lot of options aside from the coaches who are currently leading specific teams. I mean, this could even leak into the conversation about Guardiola and why he stayed at City, but we can save that for when we get to that. But for Man U, it's like, what other options do you have? It's like, you keep Ola, and you know eventually with Ola's side, they're going to show up at some point. Because it always happens every year. It's like, oh, this is the year that Ola's going to get fired, or oh, this is the year they're going to tank. And then Marcus Rashford scores like 16 goals, and before you know it, they're in third. So again, like, I'll give it time. I like Ola as a coach. Is he a masterclass? No, I don't think so. But I like him enough to where I think he can get us where we want to be, top four. But there's still a lot of missing pieces for us to be back in that competing for the league position, but I feel like a lot of teams probably feel that way, not just Manchester United. But
yeah, for sure. I think I definitely do think a lot of teams feel that way. I'm really not worried about like positioning on the table right now, just because in my mind I've accepted this is gonna be like one of the wackiest seasons that we probably will ever see. And again, I'm saying that more for my sake, not for Man U. Like I'm looking at Man City sitting at 13th, and yeah, trying not to freak out about it. But especially with the teams that play Champions League and Europa League, I know we just came back. We're on the back of an international break, but it's just all these players are getting asked to play so many games. And I think we're seeing a lot of the traditional top six teams kind of look tired against even some of the lower opposition, just like West Brom or Fulham or Arsenal against Leeds, although that was, accompanied by the Pepe red card and all that other good stuff. But yeah, more specifically Man U, Arsenal, and Man City, where they are on the table, I'm just thinking to myself, there's a lot of games left, and this is just such a weird situation for everyone involved that I'm just waiting until maybe mid-season or like a couple of weeks, a couple more weeks until I freak out, basically.
Right.
But yeah, I just think that's it's a very like hard set of factors to play with. I mean, the schedule, the rotation, Man U, I don't think Man U has that much of a bench.
No, we really don't. I mean, aside from the guys that are starting 11, we don't have a whole lot of depth to reach into on the bench. I mean, it's a lot of overpaid starters, I would say. And we're really stacked for defensive midfielders, but aside from that, like, for people who go up top, we don't really have many options. I mean, defensively, we don't really have a ton of options. And I just kind of go into your conversation as well, which this can lead into our second bullet point, is injuries have been a huge factor for a lot of the top six teams. I mean, Man U, not as much, but Man City, like you know, has suffered lots of injuries. And this has kind of been Guardiola's issue with the team since he got there, is injuries. Liverpool is trying to just find kids to just go onto the field and start because they've just suffered so many injuries. I mean, it's been insane. I mean, this is what happens when there's a lack of a preseason or an ability for them to train and prepare their bodies for the long haul of this season. I mean, it won't be long now, and like they're going to have fans in the stadium too, so they're going to finally start to get a little bit of that stadium environment back too. So maybe that'll be a little bit more good than bad, but I guess we'll see on December 2nd.
Oh, I thought it was the 10th. That's another big announcement. England has just said that there's, I think they cap it at like 4,000 people per stadium or per game or something like that. But yeah, fans will be allowed back, and that'll be really interesting to see just how that changes the dynamic of this whole thing. I don't think we realize how long we've been watching like pandemic football without fans in the stands. I think it'll be a really nice surprise, if I'm being honest.
And I would agree with you on that as well.
Yeah, especially that first one. I don't know who that first game will be on the second, but whoever it is, I think it's going to feel really good and special and warm, just like how it's supposed to be.
God, I hope it's not going to be like Burnley versus Newcastle or something like that.
Man, I will take it at this point. Anything else about Man U? Not a very impressive win, but a win nonetheless, a clean sheet. Again, I'm really not worried about positioning on the table at the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of Man U, I've got no more to say. And West Brom, I'm sorry, I don't know too much about your team. All I know is Slaven Bilic is your coach, and I don't think you're prepared to stay up. So y'all are in for a long season. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Next up, we do have the Manchester City versus Tottenham game. Tottenham won 2-0. I'll start off talking about Tottenham a little bit. I watched this game. It was like a classic Mourinho game. Like it was just you know, I think City had like almost 60 to 65% possession. I think they had triple the amount of passes. They had over 20 some shots, or just a little bit under 20, and barely any of them were actually, actually were on target. And then all it took was two counterattacks, from Tottenham to kind of just dismantle. And just, again, it was a very traditional Mourinho performance in my eyes, which I guess is something of a good sight. Not for me, but, for Tottenham fans especially, what they wanted to get out of Mourinho, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get it wasn't necessarily like a gritty win, but you're going to get those gritty wins, especially if Tottenham keep going the way they are through the season. Will they bottle it? Will they not bottle it? Who knows? It's Tottenham. I think as the season goes on, again, it's a long season. International break is into effect. The Champions League, Europa League, a lot of games, even the cup games are still going. A lot of games, you're going to see those grittier, like 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 wins against everyone. But I think this is like prime Mourinho. I think this is what Tottenham have been wanting to see. But Tottenham always get the up over City, especially when we play at Tottenham. That's just how it's been for like the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Even under the helm of Pochettino.
Yeah, it's just something about, I don't know, man. Damn Spurs. I don't know. There's just something about playing them at their stadium that's always like it just messes with us. I don't know why. Shifting focus over to Man City. This was pretty sad. pretty run of the mill like City. Like it's just. I don't know. It kind of looked like City their first season under Guardiola. They're like not really sure of what to do. Every time someone would get the ball, especially in the final third, it was just like they would just like hesitate. It'd almost be like they were scared. Like they didn't know who to pass. They're just not sure of themselves. And that, first off, in and of itself, is a very weird thing to watch, especially after the past couple of years under Pep. And it's just so frustrating because I feel like the problems that they have now are fixable, like almost immediately, like it's just, we have the squad, we have the numbers, we have the depth to like really kind of look inward and see what we need to fix, whether it's like playing style, tactics, whatever it is. The City have the tools to fix it, but I just feel like it's just being very stubborn right now.
Yeah, and with Pep Guardiola's team, I mean, you are right. This looks a lot like their first season under him. I mean, they just kind of look like they're kind of all over the place. I mean, on top of injuries and the sheer number of games that they've had to play, and not having Aguero up top and having to rely on Gabriel Jesus, and even Jesus hasn't even been back for that long either. That whole offense relies heavily on Kevin De Bruyne's ability to play the ball in as well. And from what I understand, he didn't have a very good game against Tottenham either.
Nah, he didn't. He didn't have a good game.
I would guarantee that Jose made it a point for his midfielders to make sure that they make sure that Kevin De Bruyne does not have a good game. And I think they set out and did that. I mean, they still had plenty of opportunities to score, but at the end of the day, you've got to make those chances. You got to score. And Mourinho, this is a lot of the results that he got when he was at Manchester United. And I mean, a lot of people hated him for it because he would score and sit back and all. And like time and time again at Man U, it didn't work out because we didn't have the proper defenders to hold on to a lead like that. So he's actually got halfway decent center backs and defenders in general at Tottenham. So maybe we see more games like that. I mean, this is the kind of result that they wanted. That's why they brought him in there in the first place, is to win trophies. And he can guarantee results. It may not look pretty, but he can guarantee results. That's the Jose Mourinho way.
Yeah, for sure. And my only question right now is can they see it through the whole season? You know, with Tottenham, it's always a little up in the air, especially when it gets to the later stages of the season. We saw it in the season that Leicester won the title. And we've seen it time and time again where they've been up there, top three, for a long time, for the majority of the season. And then just in the last, like, 2 or 3 months of the season, just something, they have this like 2 or 3 week stretch where they just don't get results, and all of a sudden they're like, oh well, they're won our chance. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that with Mourinho, and if they can keep that going. And just a little final point with City, it's I guess we don't have that many injuries, to be honest. I think we just have Ake out. Aguero, he's still out, but he'll be back in the next couple weeks. It'll be very interesting to see what City do maybe over the next couple of transfer windows as far as a striker goes, because we've definitely missed Aguero. Jesus is not the striker we want him to be. He's also just very scared in front of goal. Like, I don't know what's up with him, but he's just so hesitant, just like anyone else. And it's just a lot of really slow play right now, from left to right, right to left, trying to find spaces. I just remember it being a lot quicker when it was Sané, Aguero, Sterling up front. And, you know, now we have Gabriel Jesus, Ferran Torres, and Sterling, or Mahrez. You know, and it's just a little clunky. And I'd definitely like to see a little bit of a pickup in the pace of the passing and everything else. We definitely... like I said, definitely have the tools to fix this. We don't need to wait until we buy someone or for someone to come in to do it for us.
Right. Hey, you mentioned it before about Gabriel Jesus. He's kind of been an interesting piece for Manchester City ever since he got there a couple years ago. He is definitely not panning out the way I had anticipated him coming into the league. I mean, he's really not as explosive as, you know, it was led to believe when he came from the Brazilian league, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like,
his last team, but
it's kind of interesting now that he's had to kind of take more of the front load to try and, you know, be the striker this team needs. You know, like, is this in the future, is this the guy that they want to stick with? I mean,
probably not.
He has some big shoes to fill with Aguero, and, you know, even, like, he can go back as, like, Eden Checo and some of the other guys that have come in and sat at that number 9 spot. You know, it's just, I don't see him being a long-term solution. I could see him being shipped out at some point in the near future, but...
yeah, for sure. I definitely don't think we'll sell him, but I think he'll just be a backup, if I'm being honest. But I'm pretty sure if he gets paid enough, he'll be happy with it.
Yeah, he probably will.
Moving on, we got Liverpool v Leicester happened on Sunday. Liverpool absolutely dominated. Very, I guess, crazy to watch, you know, knowing how many injuries and how many people they have out. Jota is looking like the signing of the season for them. You know, everyone thought it would be Thiago Alcantara, but you know, he's had his injury issues, but Jota is like a goal machine. Like, he just gets in there, and he has that, like, really killer instinct that you would expect people like Jesus to have. And I think they're definitely getting their money's worth out of him. And just looking like nothing happened. You know, looking like they have a full squad out there or something. It was kind of crazy to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I even remember I specifically mentioned that Liverpool paid like 30 or 40 million for a substitute, and he has proven me wrong so quickly. I mean, now that Salah is still out with injury, he's having to take over his spot, and he just looks so
COVID right now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Jota looks so comfortable on that right wing spot. I mean, it looks like they're not really losing much. I mean, for Liverpool fans, that probably feels pretty good, knowing if, you know, one of your world-class wingers goes down from COVID or from an injury, you have an easily enough person to just slip in, play that spot, and just score goals like crazy. I mean, I was surprised how easily they kind of took out Leicester, because Leicester is not an easy team to break down anymore. I mean, ever since they won the league, they've kind of cemented themselves as the team in the conversation. I mean, they're easily top six. They're always competing now. They have a very strong side. But this is one of the moments I was just very surprised how poorly they played. I mean, defensively, they were broken down all over the place. I mean, it's also to be expected of these fast counterattacking sides that Jurgen Klopp likes to play at Liverpool. But they just literally completely overran them in all the channels. Like, it's just complete dismemberment.
Yeah, it was just a... It must actually feel really good for Liverpool, because this was supposed to be the game. Like, this is the first game back from international break. Joe Gomez has just picked up an injury, I think at when he was training with England. Salah had test positive for COVID-19. He has to self-isolate. All of a sudden, Leicester are saying, oh, yeah, they're missing half of their back line. Like, they only, I think they had Matip and Robertson as the only two like defined starters back there, with Milner playing on the other fullback position, and I think they had Fabinho as the other center back. Leicester must have been just like, you know, just so hyped for this game, because they could have gone, I think, top of the league, either top or, you know, tied with Tottenham in second place. But again, it's just this Liverpool, this very resilient Liverpool side that I do remember a couple episodes, or the beginning, I guess, a preview of the season, the episode that we had. We said maybe they had the most complete squad, but maybe they didn't have that much depth to him. But, I mean, now we can obviously see that they do, you know. And yeah. I know this is just one game in from their whole injury troubles, and VVD, Van Dijk is out for most likely the year. Joe Gomez is out for a significant portion of the year. They'll get Salah back. They'll get Alexander-Arnold back, but it's just like, wow, like what's going on? You know, you have all these injuries, you prepare for a tough game against Leicester, and then all of a sudden you go out there like nothing happened.
I mean, these are the kind of games that really separate the boys from the men. I mean, even with all these injuries, they can still easily pull out an easy result and keep this team scoreless. I mean, that's just a sign of a champion. I don't think anyone's going to get in their way this season again, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I think so too. On the other note, I think Leicester, I think they've been known to have blips against the bigger teams. They obviously handled City really well earlier in the season with that 5-2 win. They can compete against, you know, the big six, but at this point they are a part of the big six in my opinion. I think they'll keep pushing in this title race just like they have done, and it'll be really interesting to see how they fare throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, let's you want to jump into the next point?
Yeah, go for it.
So next bullet point we got is Chelsea winning again. So it seems like they're starting to right the ship a little bit. They got a 2-0 victory over Newcastle, and they kept another clean sheet. They haven't conceded a goal in 5 games.
Yeah, Edouard Mendy is out there getting clean sheets like nothing. Kind of a crazy signing. This was a game that I didn't watch over the weekend, but after, you know, reading about it, seeing some highlights, Timo Werner playing on the left side with Abraham playing up top. It works. It works really well. It gives Werner a lot of freedom to either come, cut in, go into the box for crosses. It just works really, really well. And they pick up a win. They have their starter. They have their big money buys firing. You know, Werner's doing well. Ziyech is settling in. Ziyech's playing really well, and Havertz is settling in, picking up another win against this kind of a tough Newcastle side, I would say. And but all this just kind of makes me wonder, where does Pulisic fit in? You know, like Lampard is obviously likes Pulisic. But, you know, after he gets back from injury, is Lampard going to risk kind of shifting the balance of the team just to get Pulisic in there? Or if he's just kind of leave it alone and let kind of the natural rotation of players do do its own thing for him to get playing time.
So I imagine once he gets back from injury, I mean, he was playing really well up until his injury. So he's going to probably kind of slowly intermingle him back into the side. He's probably going to have him come off the bench a couple times. And then if he starts blowing up like he did before, and then we're going to see him reemerge in the squad. But I mean, with Werner and Ziyech playing like the way we thought they would, it's going to be very hard for him to break into the side. I mean, Tammy Abraham, I'm glad to see him back playing. I think he deserves that number nine role. He played really well last year, and it's kind of good to see him back into the fold. I mean, this is a very, very deadly side. So it really sucks for Pulisic, but with this kind of talent surrounding the team, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I think, first off, I think Lampard is going to keep monitoring Pulisic. He's had, I think, just the same kind of little injury that's been nagging him for a while. So definitely going to keep an eye out on him, want to keep him fit as possible for as much of the season. I don't think he'll mess with it too much right away. I think playing Werner on the left, Tammy as a number nine, Ziyech on the other side, Havertz in the middle, I think that works. And if it's not broken, then I don't know why he would put Pulisic in there when it would mess with the balance of the squad. That does feel really disheartening to say, because I like Pulisic. I like him as a player. I like him what he brings to the U.S. national team, and he does need that playing time. So it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of manage that as, you know, they go through the season and he gets healthy again.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what's going to transpire. I mean, it also could just be personal preference for Lampard. I mean, if he really wants Timo Werner sitting at that number nine spot, then that could potentially open up that left-hand side for Pulisic. But we're just going to have to wait and see how he comes back from injury and see how he does.
Yeah, for sure. But right now, all the Chelsea signings are playing probably as well as we would hope for them to be. You know, Edouard Mendy, I think, kept five or four clean sheets out of his first five games. I think they've now some of them have been in Champions League, but it's just a, you know, everyone's playing, I think, to the best of their abilities. Now it's kind of a waiting game. See how, if they can maintain this throughout the season. But yeah, anything else with Chelsea? Or Newcastle. We don't really talk much about Newcastle, but anything on either of those two clubs, James?
In terms of Newcastle, they've really started to slip off. I mean, they had a really good start to the beginning of the year, but I mean, they've had a tough run of games when they've had to play a lot of big teams recently, and it's just really showing, you know, the lack of quality they have at times. I mean, they're sitting in 15th, they're well out of the relegation zone by 7 points, so they're not in, like, a room for concern. I mean, that mid-table is like the Wild West out there. It's like, if you get a win, like, you jump from 15th to 7th. Like, it's, I mean, it's a crapshoot. So, it's like, really early, so we're not really going to be able to tell that much, especially from bottom half teams. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But that's all I got to say.
One of the last points that we have here about the Premier League is, I know we've already talked about Tottenham a little bit, but Tottenham being at the top of the league, again, with that nice Mourinho performance under their belt against City. You know, what does this mean moving forward? You know, is Jose going to rise up to be the figurehead that Tottenham fans want him to be, or are they going to bottle it?
Well, they're the team who have coined the term Spursy, and pulling the Spurs. So, I mean, they have quite the trek ahead of them. I mean, again, this is still early on. They're going to have to win a lot of games. They're going to have to keep doing these. I mean, if this is the style of play he wants to do, he's going to have to hold off some of the world's best attacking powers that be. I mean, even Chelsea is going to be difficult to keep bottled up. I mean, Liverpool is not going to fold, I don't think, like Man City did. Because Man City, I mean, has been, you know, slow moving and not as quick to fire as they have been previous seasons. So Liverpool's going to find a way to maneuver around it. And I don't know what's going to happen once the defense fails him, because, I mean, that's when his whole game plan flies out the window. And now he's got to go back on the front foot and try and score. And he can't rely on the counterattacks anymore. Can he do that against the rest of the better teams in the Premier League? I don't think so. And is this the guy that Tottenham wants? I don't think so. I thought that was Pochettino, and I thought he did a great job. I'm still, even to this day, I'm shocked he got fired. Or they had a mutual, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I think his firing came out at a right time. I mean, Tottenham were absolutely god-awful. And, again, it might have just been, you know, the thrill of having a new manager in there. But as soon as Mourinho came in, they started playing well. And then they dipped for a good amount of games. And then, you know, back from lockdown, they weren't actually playing too bad. It's just Harry Kane, I think, is going to make the biggest difference. I don't know how many goals he has, but I do know he has 9 assists in 9 games, which is crazy. Those are like De Bruyne numbers. I think people are starting to realize just how good of a passer he is, and how many assists or how many passes he can just get out to Son, and how accurate it is. I just think he's definitely going to be the key. Son, what can you say about Son? I love Son. He's just a great guy. He's a great player. I think both of them will prove to carry this Tottenham side very far into the season. How far, who knows? But
just to kind of piggyback off of what you were saying, I mean, you're right. Harry Kane has been next level this year, and I think he's kind of given that expectation from Jose that he needs him to be more of a playmaker, as well as, you know, the goal scoring threat that he's always been. And utilizing Heung-min Son the way that he has, like, he just looks like a completely different player under Mourinho. I will give him that. It's just, are we going to see longevity in this? Are they going to sustain this model? Like, is it going to keep them where they want to be at the top of the league? I don't know. It's still very early on. They still have a good 2/3 of the season left to play. So that's a lot of football to be played still.
Yeah, yeah. And then just our very last point in our Around the Grounds for the Premier League is we just want to take a real quick look at the bottom three in the league right now, which consists of Fulham at 18th with 4 points, West Brom at 19th with 3 points, and Sheffield United sitting dead bottom with only a point, a draw, for the whole season.
Poor Sheffield.
You know, are there any big surprises in there for you? I think we're both probably going to say the same one. Do you see this changing throughout the season? Again, very early on, but we love to speculate here. James, take it away.
So I'm going to go ahead and start off. Fulham and West Brom, neither of us are surprised by any means. No. We knew that they were so poorly equipped for the Prem that they had no shot at staying up. I mean, West Brom's panic buy for a defender was it Kolarov? No.
No, it was the guy from Chelsea.
Oh, God, what was his name? Because I remember you called it a FIFA career mode move.
Yeah, that's 100% of a move that I would.
Oh, Ivanovic. Like, yeah, it was Ivanovic.
Ivanovic, yeah. From Zenit. Saint
yes. I think. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, completely agree. Fulham, back in the league. Not enjoying it. But it's just, what can you say with that squad that they have? I mean, in West Brom, too. It's so hard. And I bet he was even harder, you know, with all the financial struggles that almost every club had this year due to COVID, to kind of really fund the team that they wanted to. And even so, I mean, how are you going to convince a lot of players to come and play for Fulham and West Brom?
Yeah, I mean, it just really sucks for them. COVID has really stricken it pretty hard, especially on the bottom half teams who rely so heavily on, like, their ticket sales and, like, the TV revenue they make from the games. I mean, a lot of them haven't really been able to make the moves that they would like. I mean, Fulham, on the other hand, they've had the chance to actually move up the table, but they're inability to score penalties has bit them so bad in the butt. And they just cannot capitalize on pens. Because yeah, they had
such a weird thing.
I mean, there was a lot of times they could have actually turned a result around to a draw, maybe even a win. But I think everyone's seen the Pinnika attempt from what was his name? For Lookman. Yeah, because he tried to do a Pinnika, and whoever it was literally just saw it as soon as he kicked the ball. I mean, even Mitrovic has one or two missed penalties that could have changed results. I mean, it's just like they're so young but so inexperienced in the Prem that it's starting to shoot them in the foot at this point. I mean, I feel like Fulham if it was between Fulham and West Brom, I think Fulham has a real good chance to get themselves out of the hole, but they have to start turning some of these results around like today to start that climb up the table. West Brom, same issues. I mean, both West Brom and Fulham are tied with the most goals conceded in the league.
Yeah, and I think the team that we're most surprised at is Sheffield United. You know, coming at 0 wins, a draw, and 8 losses. They normally put in good performances. I guess they're like quote unquote good losses, because they actually play really well. But it's just they had a problem scoring goals last year. You can definitely tell that that's still an ongoing issue, even though their club record signing, Ryan Brewster, he didn't even start this past weekend. They had subbed him in, I think, at like the 60th minute. And it's like, I don't think you can do that with your record signing. I know that he's a young kid, and he's not going to solve all your problems, but you got to put him out there. You know, you had the faith, you had the trust to spend that much money on him. You got to have the trust for him to kind of help you at least get out of relegation at this point. I don't think Sheffield will stay down there. I think they're probably going to pull like a Burnley. You know, they're going to muddle down here for a long time. And then, you know, after midway through the season, they'll probably pick it up and get out of there. But I definitely didn't expect them to be in a relegation scrap, at least this early on in the season, or this badly early on in the season, too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. If you're going to spend that much money on Ryan Brewster, you have to start him, especially when you only have 4 goals to your name. Like, if you've spent all that money on a striker, like, you've got to play him. I mean, to give Sheffield a little bit of credit, I mean, their last 5 games, they've played West Ham, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, and they just tied with Fulham 1-1. So, I mean, having to play West Ham, who is hot at the time, Chelsea scored 4 past them. Chelsea is going to be ready to go for that game. Man City, it's going to be a difficult one for them to get a result on. And, of course, Liverpool. I mean, that's a rough 5 games to go. So once they start getting into the lower half of the table, you start seeing them pick up some more points, and then Sheffield's going to start their climb out of there. But I guess that kind of leads into the next question of, if we think Sheffield's going to climb out, who's going to take his place? Or take its place, I should say.
Yeah, that's a tough one to call. I definitely think Sheffield can turn it around, especially after the season that they had. I don't think there is a chance that they will fire Chris Wilder. No matter how badly they maintain this form throughout the season, and it's very hard to call who's gonna hop in there. I think whoever it is, it's gonna be someone that has been in the league for a little bit now. I think. I don't know, Brighton's not looking too hot, and of course Burnley, but how many times have we seen Burnley switch between 16, 17, 18, you know, throughout the first two-thirds of the season? You know, that's just kind of their territory, and they
yeah, that's their comfort zone.
Yeah, eventually they escape it, they're safe from relegation with a good cushion. That doesn't come until later in the season. We know the play, we know the script, but again, this year is so crazy. I think maybe Burnley might slip up and head down there. If it was between Burnley and Sheffield, I think Burnley is better equipped for the Premier League, and they have been for these past couple of seasons, obviously, because they've maintained their status in the Premier League. But I think Sheffield just have that little bit extra, or they will have that little bit extra fight to kind of get out of this relegation zone.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Although I have a feeling that Brighton is going to be the one in that scrap for relegation, in my opinion, because like Brighton has been literally like the next step below Burnley. Like they've literally just been hugging that 17th, 18th spot all of last year, and they didn't really strengthen up that much, in my opinion. So I have a feeling they're going to be the team that might drop. But again, it's early. There's plenty more football to watch, and we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, moving on from the very beloved Premier League, we move on to Spain in La Liga, where we see the struggle being had by Real Madrid and Barcelona at the moment.
So this is going to tie into, you know, previous conversations we've had on other episodes about how Barcelona, without Messi, really isn't a whole lot. And it's starting to show really badly as they're sitting in 13th. In La Liga. I don't think I ever seen Barcelona this low on the table before.
And those games are with Messi. Messi's playing those games. Like, he's not injured. He's just not the same guy, you know? Especially with everything that Barcelona is going through, specifically with him, I think the time to rely on Messi probably has passed at Barca. And they're looking at a very, very dire situation sitting at 13th right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of got to the point where you can tell that Messi is mentally checked out. He should have left this summer. That much is so painfully obvious. But if this is what happens when you force players into a situation they don't want to be in. At this point, Messi doesn't want to be there. The rest of the team is dragging down with him. And without him playing at his best, they're really not really much of a team to begin with, like we've said previously before. And this is going to continue. I mean, obviously, it's Barcelona. They're going to start pulling results. I mean, even though they're sitting at 13th with 11 points, they're only 3 points difference from fifth place, Cadiz. So, like, that could easily change. But you know, the results that they're getting are not good. I mean, what's left to say about Barcelona? It's sad, and they've just made so many mistakes recently, and there's been so much infighting in the team. I mean, Griezmann's agents coming out and saying that, like, Messi is like a tyrant with the team and, you know, forcing morale down, and then paparazzi stop Messi right when he gets off the plane and start bombarding with questions, and he's just, you know, telling them, I'm tired of being, you know, the reason we stink, or I'm tired, like, you know, that I'm the reason that everyone's feeling so bad.
I'm tired of taking the blame, and he should be. He has done nothing but give all his time and energy and love into that club, and this is what happens. It's just not a good situation for him to be in, or Barca to be in. And again, with Pep, especially with Pep signing that new contract, the rumors are getting going again. He's going to be a City, blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, we see Real Madrid struggling with a mostly fully fit squad with Zinedine Zidane at the top leading them. And no one really knows why, you know, why they're struggling this bad.
I mean, it's very bizarre. I mean, they get absolutely stomped by Valencia 4-1. A couple weeks ago, and they tie with Villarreal. I mean, Villarreal, to be fair, has been pretty good this season. So, granted, they played a good game against them, but it's like, I'm pretty sure they lost Sergio Ramos to an injury. So, you know, that's, you know, a good portion of their leadership is gone. If I'm not mistaken, I'm just double checking.
He did, yeah. Yeah, he did. He was injured, actually, when he was playing with Spain.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, he's out for the time being. And they just can't seem to find the leadership that they need. I mean, they're 6 points behind Real Sociedad, which we will definitely talk about Real Sociedad. But it's just one of those things where the two that have always cemented themselves at the top are struggling. What's the rest of the league look like? And it's absolute chaos at this moment. I mean, just looking at the table just gives me anxiety. Like, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, but I think we'll see that with a lot of the leagues around Europe right now, just how your normal leaders are kind of lackluster right now. You probably have those big, you know, those seven or eight teams that are leveled on points, like you mentioned earlier, could just flip at any moment with a win or a loss. I think that's kind of just what Europe's all about this year. But yeah, on the flip side of Barcelona and Real Madrid, we see Real Sociedad currently at the top of the table, and Atletico, I think, second, with actually two games in hand. So they have a little bit of Atletico has a little bit of catching up to do, but they are looking hot with João Felix. I think he's finally starting to kind of prove his price tag. Yeah, Sociedad. I haven't watched Sociedad this season. All I know is that my boy Silva's over there. You know, I think he started every game. I think he has two assists, a goal. But again, when your normal leaders are struggling this much, you just need to take advantage, and that's exactly what Real Sociedad are doing.
I mean, David Silva, I think he's got the most assists in the league right now. I mean, he has the most key passes, most chances created. I mean, he's been like next level. He looks like he used to when he was younger. It seems like this move to Real Sociedad really revitalized his career. I mean, Atletico Madrid, like you said, under João Felix, I'm so happy that he's starting to play well, because I was worried that he was going to have to like ship his way back over to Portugal for a little bit to get his mojo back. But he's playing very, very well. I mean, is he the team's top goal scorer? I think he is.
João is.
Or he's tied with Luis Suarez with 5. So yeah. He's playing really, really well. I think that system really suits him a lot better, or either he's adapted to that style a lot better now in his second season, to the point where he feels more comfortable, so now he's getting back in those goal-scoring threats. So it's good to see. And with the two games in hand, I could see Atletico Madrid jumping them pretty soon at the top, because they're only 3 points behind with two games to go. And let's see. I'm just checking to see who they play next. They have Valencia and then Real Valladolid for the next two La Liga games. So it's very possible.
Yeah, and I think Atletico is one of the very few teams, you know, in La Liga specifically, that they're one of those teams that solidify their space at the top, and they're one of the few ones that aren't struggling right now. I think if they take advantage of this early season, they could open up a good cushion against teams like Real Madrid and Barca, and you know, we could see a brand new winner of La Liga that is not either of those two teams.
It'd be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, and it'd be nice for them too, because I know that recently, you know, people have been saying, you know, what's Atletico doing? I know we've talked about Atletico and their playing style, how they play kind of their Spanish Burnley, but you know, it'll be really good to kind of hush those people up, aka us, and kind of prove people wrong, prove that Atletico Madrid still know how to play, still know how to attack, and still know how to win titles.
Amen.
Yeah. Anything else on La Liga in general, James?
No, I'm good.
All right. And our last stop at Around the Grounds is we're going to cover a little bit of the Bundesliga. Der Klassiker was about, did I say that right?
Der Klassiker, yeah.
Der Klassiker. The derby between Bayern and Dortmund happened a couple weeks ago. Bayern came out on top 3-2. Winning goal scored by Leroy Sané. Shout out to all the Man City alums. I wish you were still with us. But this weekend we saw Bayern drop points against Werder Bremen, and Haaland going on an absolute tear against Hertha Berlin.
He absolutely annihilated that defense. I mean, scored 4. I mean, kid's a stud. There's no way around it.
He's a bully, man. He's a freaking bully. Like, he is like an athlete. Like, I think he's one of those people that can, like, play any sport. Like, he's just built for just about every sport there is. He's part of this, like, weird I guess you could say, like, older mentality of a striker, where, like, he's tall, he's lanky, he's strong, and he's fast. You know, just like Timo Werner. You know, they kind of have kind of similar builds. They play a little bit differently, but I kind of like to think of I kind of like to put them in the same box as far as strikers go. They're that weird mix of like just bullies on the field, and they're young and they're ready, you know, and they're scarier to play.
Yeah, I hope I don't jinx this, but Haaland reminds me a lot of Ibrahimovic, just from his size and his stature and his ability just to easily maneuver the ball around on his feet and get around goalkeepers. And he just reminds me of a young Ibrahimovic, and he just scores at will. I mean, it's so fun to watch him play. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen when he leaves Borussia Dortmund. I mean, the sky's the limit for him right now, and I could see him just going further and further beyond. I mean, Haaland could potentially be that next big name that we always talk about. You know, the name that Neymar was supposed to be, or, you know, Gabriel Jesus, or, you know, he's just that next level athlete. It's like I said, the sky's the limit. We'll see how he does.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to see, you know, how he gets on for the whole season. I don't think he'll leave anytime soon. You know, just personally, I think he'll at least stay throughout this whole season. He's probably going after some goal scoring record that's probably held by Robert Lewandowski. and I think he'll have a really good shot at it. And I think it's smart. I think this move for him was very, very smart, especially with big, big names coming after him. Where was he playing at before? Salzburg, I think.
Yeah, Salzburg.
Yeah, I think it was a very smart move. I think he loves it there. I think he's there with a lot of people his age, you know, Sancho, Gio Reyna. It's just Dortmund has like this everlasting daycare where they just bring in talent, they nurture them, and then they ship them off for a big price tag, and that's the way they've always operated. It's only a point that separates both of these teams. Do you see Dortmund taking it this year?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I mean, Bayern is far too well equipped, and they know this song and dance of playing the Champions League and winning the league. I mean, they've got guys who've been doing it for years, and this is not going to be anything new for them. They're well prepared. They've already taken Der Klassiker from Dortmund from the first one. So, I mean, unless Dortmund undoes, like, you know, 5 years of history of them just getting whooped in Der Klassiker, I don't see anything changing this time. But that's just me.
Yeah, I feel the same. Bayern have only gotten stronger after this past window. You know, they sold Thiago, but they also brought in, they brought in Sané earlier, but Sané is now getting regular playing time in there. They have the bench, they have the know-how, they have the experience. And like you mentioned, I think that was a very good point. They know this song and dance. They know how this goes. They know that Dortmund will stick with them as far as they can. But again, those last 2 months of the season, we'll see Dortmund probably fall out of place, unfortunately. And then just the last team we have on the Bundesliga here, who is a very big surprise to both of us, is Union Berlin, who is in fifth place currently in the Bundesliga.
It's crazy they've found themselves up this high. I mean, they were almost relegated back to the Bundesliga 2 not too long ago. Now they're just chilling in fifth place. I mean, they have 18 goals, which is only the third most goals scored behind Bayern and Dortmund. And they've only conceded like eight or so. I mean, they're firing on all cylinders. It's kind of crazy. I mean, they've beaten Cologne, Bielefeld, Hoffenheim, and drew Freiburg and Schalke on their last two games, but they're getting the results. Maybe, I mean, they've anything past like mid table, I think, is going to be crazy for them, because I don't think they can sustain this kind of playing ability. But I think they've definitely secured security in the Bundesliga at least.
Yeah, for sure. I think, they've had sort of an easy run of games. You know, Schalke haven't been too hot for a while now. Freiburg, we know what they're up to. Hoffenheim and Cologne, both big wins. But yeah, it's very refreshing to see a new face up there. And I don't think they'll keep up with it. But again, with this craziness of this season, this is the stuff that you're gonna see. I think much like Southampton being in fifth place in the Premier League.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Yeah. I think stuff like this is going to happen, especially when your big boys or your normal, you know, big teams aren't playing up to the level that they usually do. But yeah, anything else on the Bundesliga or any of these teams in general?
I don't think so. I mean, the bottom three for the Bundesliga look a lot like how I thought it would with Schalke, Köln, and Bielefeld. But, I mean, it looks like the Bundesliga is kind of playing out the way a lot of people thought it would. With Bayern on top, Dortmund in second, Leverkusen and Leipzig being in the conversation, and then the rest is up for grabs, honestly.
Yeah, go for it. Maybe Union Berlin ends up in one of those Europa League spots. Who knows?
Ooh, that'd be wild.
That would be wild. Cool. And we do usually have a little bit of a discussion segment here. It's pretty short today. You know, we hope that we've covered some of the leagues that you guys are interested in. A lot of good stuff has happened. A lot of weird stuff has happened this season in general. And with that, we're going to move on to our From the Pitch Side segment. And we have just one thing to talk about here, one very weird thing. The MLS playoffs, more specifically the game between Orlando City and NYCFC.
So I think I'll just go ahead and do a little bit of a breakdown for all those who are listening that may not have seen the video. So Orlando City was playing NYCFC, and it got down to a penalty shootout at the end for a knockout. It had gotten like 3-for-3, all three first penalty takers for both teams made their pens. On the fourth, Gillespie, the Peruvian goalkeeper for Orlando, he made the save to finish NYCFC off. It went into a VAR recall and claimed that Gillespie had stepped off his line, and that was his second yellow, so he gets sent off. So Orlando brings off their second string goalkeeper and attempts to sub him on and sub off one of the field players. He gets in goal. He like has his gloves on. He's ready to go. They're about to take the shot. And then the refs are like, oh, hold on. Wait a second. You can't sub on a goalkeeper from a field player. You can't sub anybody on for the shootout. You have to go with one of your field players in goal.
You have to go with one of the people that plays.
which is crazy. So that guy goes back to the bench, takes his gloves off, and he looks so frustrated. And he just hands him off to, I forgot who it was that stepped in for him.
I forgot his name, too.
He slips the gloves on. He goes in goal.
Outfield player.
Do what?
I said it was an outfield player. I think it was some midfielder.
It was one of the guys who was supposed to take a pen. He goes in goal. He slips the gloves on. The gloves. The guy who was shooting, I think it was Maxi Morales, sends the ball to the right. He scores. It goes back to Orlando. They score that pen. And then the following pen, that field player is in goal. He blocks the shot. They think they've won the game. And the referees are having a hard time controlling the game. They have everyone come back. Orlando has to go back and score another one, which they do. And finally, Orlando has claimed the winner of the game and advances to the next round of the MLS Cup. I mean, it's absolute bonkers. I mean, I sent in our group chat today that the referee team from that game is no longer allowed to work any of the other MLS playoff games.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, that whole sequence of things happening probably took longer than the shootout itself.
And oh, I have no doubt.
It's just, again, American soccer. What do you come to expect from the great MLS? But some nice traditional refereeing failures. And a penalty shootout being won by one of your outfield players making the very last save of the game, of the shootout.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's peak American football, peak American soccer. Orlando City is now on to the next round of the MLS playoffs.
I think they advanced to the round of 16. I don't know if they've determined who they're going to play yet at this point, because, I mean, these games are currently ongoing, which, to tag on to this discussion, San Jose was playing Sporting Kansas City, and it was tied 2-2. Sporting Kansas City goes down the field, gets a third, and in the dying embers of the game, Wondolowski scores the equalizer. They go into a penalty shootout. And Tim Melia, the goalkeeper for Sporting Kansas City, saves four pens in a row. Four. Just puts the team on his back. He's like, I got y'all. Don't even worry about it. Blocks four. San Jose is stunned. I mean, this whole week in general of MLS has just been absolutely nuts. I just wish every week could be this intense, but it's not. For so. Sure.
And just a one last tidbit, Nashville won their first playoff game as an expansion club, first year.
And that ripper one of their guys had in the first in the second half was insane. It looked like a pro club's goal, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. But I thought that was really cool. Nashville finished in seventh in the Eastern Conference. Pick up their very first MLS playoff win and are now going on to the next round. So very interesting to see how they do, where they go, who they play, how they end up this season.
Nashville to win the MLS Cup.
Boo. Sure, why here not?
First.
It's 2020. Why not?
You know? Why not?
It's 2020. Let him have it. Come on.
I mean, if Nashville can't do it, we'll just wait for Charlotte to get here and then we'll do it. That's fine.
Barf. Sure.
barf. Sorry, everybody from Charlotte Football Club. I have just jinxed us all.
Yeah, you have. Now we're going to be even more ass this first season coming up.
No.
But yeah, definitely MLS playoffs. Again, this is part of the MLS season that I actually keep up with. And I think we'll probably cover it throughout these next couple episodes. Still spans for a couple weeks. And I don't think the final is until mid-December. So we'll definitely be bringing you those updates from the MLS, from the playoffs. And I think, Hamas, you got anything else to say, man?
Just kind of leap into our outro. I think be sure to check us out on Twitter at Two Tackle and check out our Facebook page. Just look up 2 Footed Tackle Podcast. You'll find us on there and just look out for our logo. Thank you everyone for listening. Apologies for the delay. We'll try and pump out some more episodes. Now we're getting into the holiday break. We have some more time to get off work and whatnot. So just keep your eyes open, your ears peeled for our new episodes. And thanks again for listening and have a happy Thanksgiving. How about that?
Yeah. Hey, everyone, stay safe. All right. Stay whatever safe. You do, stay safe. Go wash your hands. Go drink some water. Go hang out with some fam a little bit. Drink some water. Drink some water.
Are you speaking English?
Yes. No. anyways, thank you all so much for being here. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Two Footed Tackle. Everyone have a happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody. Goodbye.